a week of leave, believe it or not, which has done me the world of good. But the week has literally gone to the dogs for my wife and I. We've had a Bichon Frise. If those of you know what they are, they're small white bundles of disobedience. Teddy we've had for 11 years, and he's been a real gift from God. He was our son Barney's best friend, and he didn't leave us alone when Barney died. He was always on my foot or sat by Amanda's side. So in that respect, Teddy is irreplaceable. We have pets, all of us, whose paw prints are on our lives, and it'll always be that way. A special gift from God. So Teddy died a couple of months ago, and that feeling of loneliness with his absence is very much felt. So this week, of course, we started looking at rescue homes for a dog. And that's why this week has gone to the dogs. So it's apt that we find Jesus in the Gospel this morning talking about dogs. The discussions around the Gospel reading centered around food and eating habits and who is at the table. And Matthew and Mark present this as a healing story. But both knew that it actually embraces an awful lot more. Jesus is hard-pressed at the start of the Gospel reading. He's caught up once again in controversy. Some of Jesus' opponents are subjecting him and his disciples to greater scrutiny. And as we saw before, the feeding of the 5,000 and the wake of the murder of John the Baptist shows Jesus again seeking a space and time to be silent and to get away from the crowd. He needs the respite, and this time, rather than going on to the lake, he travels with the disciples across the border to Tyre and Sidon beside the Mediterranean Sea for that needed quiet time. Once again, that quest for peace is disrupted. A woman finds him and the disciples, and she comes into the scene not holding anything back. We're told that she's shouting a plea. Have mercy on me. Her daughter is seriously ill, and she needs Jesus' help. And she will not go until she gets it. She's a Canaanite. According to Matthew, a fact that evokes that historic and deep-rooted prejudice in that region. It places her as an outsider to Jesus and the disciples. She is someone who is different and who comes from the other side. But the woman does something which makes us stop in our tracks. She addresses Jesus with the Jewish title of the Messiah, Lord, Son of David. The title she gives Jesus is hugely important because it demonstrates that ironically she has a better grasp of who Jesus is than the disciples. The disciples to that point in the narrative hadn't come to that conclusion. She somehow recognizes him in a better way than the disciples, not just as a roaming healer, but as a rightful king. In Matthew 14, after walking on the sea, the disciples recognize Jesus as the Son of God. But it's not later until chapter 16, verse 16, that Peter addresses Jesus as the Messiah. So this woman hails Jesus as the Son of David, and she begs his mercy for her daughter. A startling fact that she recognizes him with more insight than the people who walked day by day and saw and heard the great and miraculous things that the disciples had. Strangely then, to that recognition, Jesus starts by saying nothing. Is he a bit annoyed that his retreat has been broken? Was he choosing to ignore this woman? Did he hope that she would go away? Was he waiting to see how the disciples would respond to this incursion? The response of the disciples is straightforwardly dismissive. And it maybe reflects a little bit of that natural prejudice that they held towards the Canaanites. It might just be from that emotional and spiritual exhaustion that took them to Tyre and Sidon in the first place. So maybe in that sense they were just being protective of their master. So they tell Jesus to send her away because they're tired of hearing her cries for help. That doesn't sound like what a disciple should be or what a disciple should know. But whatever their reasons, the choice they make in their mission is to dismiss this person rather than help them. Jesus doesn't heed them. And it's maybe that refusal to listen to the disciples that gives the woman hope that her request will be heard. She does something significant. Even after calling Jesus the Messiah, she takes it another step and she kneels before him. Matthew uses this action to identify this as one befitting a king. So it's easy for us to forget that previously this has happened. If you remember back to the birth of Jesus, it's the Magi, the three kings, who find themselves first to offer worship of Jesus in the same way. They take a knee before him. For the woman to treat Jesus in this manner, it's in keeping with her earlier declaration. She bows to worship, and as she kneels before him, she recognizes him, and she makes that statement that she sees him as one who has authority, not just to sit on a throne as king, but to wield that power over the situation where her daughter is finding herself. That's enough for Jesus. He speaks up. Twice he explains to her that his mission, first and foremost, is to seek out and save the lost sheep of Israel. The house of Israel has provided Jesus with more work than one labourer could feasibly handle. And that maybe is an indication of Jesus finding his feet as a human, being given that divine mission, but discovering that being one pair of hands and one pair of feet is not enough. So where it immediately sounds dismissive or restrictive, that I was only sent to the sheep of Israel, is a comment that the woman does not take as, I'm sorry, I can't help you. She insists again, Lord, help me. Jesus then responds with the words that make his hearers think. It stops us in our tracks. It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. His use of the term dogs provides a deeper discussion with the woman. It goes against the values of Jesus' words and deeds, his reflecting love and respect, especially to those who he reached out to who were on the margins of society. To give insight, some commentators would say that this word translated dogs, refers to the harmless house pet as opposed to the wild dogs that Jesus speaks of, who represent that dangerous religious falsehood that feature in Matthew and other parts of the New Testament. Whatever Jesus' disciples made of Jesus' language, the woman responds with courage and courtesy and challenge. Yes, Lord, even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. For her, the crumbs would be better than nothing. That is not what she is going away with. Her statement is striking. She places hope in what others would easily discard. The Son of David has so much power that there is enough in crumbs for her and her daughter to be healed and helped. So she just asks for that crumb, recognizing that it will be enough and no more. If you remember back to the feeding of the 5,000, we had a physical representation of this. What was given to Jesus to feed the crowd was crumbs, 5 loaves, 2 fish. But he was able to take that and feed them and have enough left over. And so it's no surprise that this is enough for this woman. She draws the words from Jesus that affirm and show respect. Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. And the woman's daughter, we're told, is healed instantly. Her words demonstrate that the boundary separating her from the house of Israel needs to be reconsidered by the disciples and Jesus himself. With a faith so pure, how can someone be deemed unclean? The encounter with the woman prepares the reader then for what we see coming next, where Jesus' great commission sends the disciples out to make disciples of all the nations.